Hello, folks. Welcome to the next episode of HYOH Podcast. Podcast for and about hammocks, hammock camping, and all things outdoors. This month is part two of my attempt, talking about the attempt of the Presidential Traverse here in New Hampshire. The Traverse is over 20 miles of hiking and will be over 8,000 vertical feet if it's done end-to-end. And well, we didn't make it end-to-end or all the way through, but boy, did we have an adventure. Last month, I shared my recordings from the hike that I had made along the way, and I left you hanging where I stopped recording. And hopefully this podcast helps fill in some of those gaps where I chat with Greg Baldwin, one of my hiking buddies that was on the trip, and we recount the mistakes, the lessons learned, and much more. Note, my bag weighed in about 20 pounds with food and water all in. Greg's pack, although we never weighed it, was at least double the weight of mine, and that comes up in the podcast. I should make a list of what I had in my pack, at least so I can remember. And when and if I do, I'll post a link in the show notes. Until then, I hope you enjoy my chat with Greg on our misadventure adventure.
How are you been?
You know, life is good. Life is good. I'm happy to be alive.
Now that you're a couple of weeks away from our adventure, how are you feeling?
About what? About the adventure or about life in general? Let's say. Well, as far as the adventure, I feel much better informed and understanding of the challenge of climbing a mountain. Is not just athletic. It's mental. It's preparation. It's so many other things. Making sure you have the right equipment. Making sure you understand the terrain that you're on and the weather. So there are many little bits that I am much better aware of now. As far as life, just, you know, appreciative. Some of the things that we went through up there were not only challenging, but they were like reflective. It made you reflect on life and what you're doing and where you are and how you want to proceed. And I definitely came back with a new vigor and zest for life.
That's awesome.
Yeah, well, man. How about you?
Good. Once I got past it, you start processing what could have been, because there was there's always stories up there of people needing to be rescued. Last week, there was a family from Florida that got trapped up there about a month and a half ago. There was a hammock hanger that had a tree fall on him and get him killed. It seems like there's a thousand ways that area can kill you. And when what we went through, and I appreciate you coming on the podcast to talk this out, is I think, like you said, there was a point there on our trip, and we'll get into it, that safety was not assured. But we all kept our heads, and in the end, it went pretty well. I mean, no long-lasting scars, either mentally or physically, but...
Speak for yourself on that one.
Yeah?
Speak for yourself on that one, because I still have a scar on my leg, henceforth, from a fall, from the trip, henceforth, my trail name as Scar.
Oh, okay. Well, I did call you Scar, but I didn't want you to be the bad character from The Lion King, you know?
I can dig it. I can transform the name. It's all good.
So let's introduce you to my audience. I met you, how many years ago? Was it 3 years ago?
Well, even longer. It was about 5 years ago.
5 years ago, I did a loop into, it was a three-day trip and in the Bonds, and I met you. And you were like a kid in a candy store. You just bounced around. And
yeah.
I mean, was that your first foray into the woods?
I'd had a couple, maybe two other overnight camping trips in the woods. However, they were a little more glampish been camping. And what I mean by that is we hiked maybe 2 miles to a cabin and then we, you know, stayed in a cabin. So that was when I met you the first time I'd actually pitched a tent, slept outdoors in a tent, you know, and things like that. So yeah, that was pretty raw and new for me to experience that and just the sheer beauty of being on top of the mountain. And the last couple of times I went hiking to the cabin, we didn't hike up to a peak. We actually hiked down into the valley. So that was like the first time that when I met you 5 years ago that I experienced being on top of mountains and just the pure joy of the landscape in general. It was just incredible.
And coming from New York City, that's a whole different experience for you.
Oh yeah, of course. You know, I grew up in the city of Baltimore. You know, I've been a city guy my entire life, and you know, now living in New York, and just the even talking to people who grew up going out camping with their families as kids, and they kind of were over it. I never had that opportunity, so you know, going out there and spending a couple of days just really just being one with nature and bringing your own food and, you know, finding water and cleaning the water and just all the little tidbits of being one with nature was the things that I just cherished. And it resonated since 5 years ago when I met you.
Yeah, and we've kept in touch ever since, and that's how this other trip came about. It was a launching of your charity, which we can get into at some point here. I don't know where we want to start, but how did you decide you wanted to do the Presidential Traverse or give it a shot?
Well, it started 5 years ago on that trip. And from my understanding, I thought that we were on the Presidential Traverse 5 years ago. And I didn't learn till later that what we were looking at afar was the Presidential Traverse, but not where we were. We were kind of on the other side. That inspired me to kind of want to do more. And I looked at the peaks. I looked at the elevation. Yeah, I'm a natural born athlete. I do triathlons and, you know, half Ironmans and run races throughout my entire, the last 10 years. You know, I really wanted to tackle that as, not only for me personally, but to launch my foundation and have people aware of the kind of trips that they could do like we did with a couple of friends, non-sanctioned, non-competitive, just going out with a couple guys on a hike. I just felt like that would be something epic to do to kind of cap off not only the foundation, but just kind of my maturation outside of purely competitive sports.
You bit off a pretty big intro to your foundation. I remember at the end, one of your comments is, next time I do one of these things, it's going to be a 5K. I remember that one. Like, you know?
Yeah. You know, it's interesting because, you know, you see the mountain. And as I said before in the beginning, athletically, you feel like you can conquer the world. And I think that's with a lot of people in a lot of situations, especially these endurance events, that, you know, you feel physically you're prepared, but there's so much more to it than just being physically ready for it. And I think, you know, out of everything, that is the one thing I learned for sure from this trip.
What, that there's a whole mental component?
Well, there's a mental component. There is pre-preparation. There's making sure that we're aware of the environment that we're, you know, for instance, with this hike, just being able to read maps and understand the route and understand where we're going, make sure we have a plan B in place always, an exit strategy when we feel like it's enough. I mean, there were no pre-plans other than us. You know, what we planned was basically on a perfect Presidential Traverse, this is the route we should go, you know. And I don't think that we prepared enough, at least for me, in what I'm used to doing. You know, I wasn't prepared enough for the adventure that we ended up partaking.
Yeah, so we can talk about the adventure. So going into it, rain was in the forecast. Little did we know that it was just going to be constant rain for three days, which led us a little bit to our misadventure. But But it started off pretty well. I mean, we met the three of us in the parking lot. And I mean, it didn't start off too bad. It was wet. I thought we had pretty good enthusiasm getting all the way up to the Madison Spring Hut. I mean, so it started off pretty well.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think, you know, we met up and rain was in the forecast. You know, for me personally, the rain really wasn't an issue. Even seeing the landscape wasn't an issue. And so when I talk about my own personal unpreparedness, you know, it was for me rather whether rain or shine, I was going, you know, so that was kind of the rain. You know, I wasn't understanding of how the weather works up there, getting lost, not being able to see the next marker, not understanding how slippery the rocks would be on the mountaintops above tree line when it rained. Mm-hmm. So those are like the little tidbits that I've learned from that situation. But yeah, I saw the forecast. We saw that it was going to rain. My thing was, as long as it's not thundering or lightning, let's go for it. So yeah, we were all pretty excited.
Yeah. And then we get to Madison Spring Hut. So that was our first real accomplishment. And then we popped up to Mount Madison, which it was so socked in. It was hard to tell. We get up there and we're like, is this the top? And I'm thinking it has to be. We're going back down the other side. But
right.
You know.
And see, and that's another thing with preparedness, because we were looking for like a sign that said, you know, you've reached the peak of Mount Madison. And then I learned after the fact that the presidentials, their markers at the top aren't actual signs. They're little, very indescript cups, like silver cups that are in the ground that you see, which signifies the top. So we already had started off, you know, kind of looking for something that didn't exist. But so those are the little tidbits of inexperience that you learn through experience.
Right. We met some really nice people in the Madison Spring Hut. That was kind of a highlight for me, because you got this eclectic group of people in a strange place. We all kind of bonded over what it took to get to where we were. So that was kind of fun, I thought.
Yeah, yeah. And just the climb up to the Madison Spring Hut was pretty cool. Just we were trekking along, it's pouring, raining. The beauty of hiking when you're below tree lines and it's raining is that you get quasi-wet, and then it's also quite serene to hear nothing but nature and the drops of the rain just hitting the leaves and of the trees. So you feel partly sheltered. So you're not, so that was really cool. And, you know, it seemed like just as it was getting arduous enough, we saw the signs for the Spring Hut. So it was like perfect timing to come there. And, they were very, very nice to us. They had tea and coffee and banana bread, gave us a chance to recharge and, you know, get some water. It was really nice.
Yep. It's very cool. Then we had to put our packs back on, because we still had a trek to get to where we were going to go camping. And by that point, we had decided to go around Mount Adams rather than going over it, because I think Mount Adams at that point was actually in the clouds, so the visibility would have gone down to nothing. So we had gone around.
Right.
Little did we know that this is part of the things I realize now, is the path around it was all, I think it was more treacherous than going over, because of all those boulders that had rolled down. I was thinking as we go around, it'd be really easy to get a leg caught in one of those boulders and get it wedged in there, lose your balance and break a leg or anything. I'm like, we should have just gone over the top, but going over the top at that point was all shrouded in clouds. So we really didn't have a good option there.
Well, so once again, I never even considered not going over any mountains with or without the rain. I mean, the only reason, because at first, I mean, I think you two were, I mean, you were kind of on the fence. You know, you didn't see the purpose, but you kind of knew my aim and you saw my thirst for you know, hitting these peaks. And so you were game.
Yep.
And Quinn was kind of whatever too, but there was an older couple, a part of the eclectic group that we met in the Madison Spring Hut. And I'll never forget this guy, old grizzly guy with his wife from Vermont, looked like they had been hiking for 137 years. And the look he had on his face when he was talking to us, he looked at us, he looked at our packs, he looked at what we had, and he was like, I strongly urge you guys not to climb Mount Adams. Just go straight to your campsite because you're not going to have visibility. The weather is only going to get worse, and it doesn't look like it's going to let up. And the higher you climb up Mount Adams, which is higher than even Mount Madison, he was saying how the weather is going to be even worse. And he was really – the look on his face was very worried of worry for us. You know, he saw these inexperienced hikers that's up there for the first time. He was already referencing stories of people being lost or being found there and just kind of the treachery of the weather. And so it was really his decision at that point that, you know, at least I took heed to when, you know, the look in his eye. Sometimes people, it doesn't even matter what they say. It's just how they look. Mm-hmm. And the look in his eye was like, do not climb. And I just, I heeded him. I'm like, you know what? He's right. And I even remember when we were about to get to the point where we could make the turn to go up Mount Adams, it was like, oh, it's only 0.5 miles. We could do that, you know. So that was totally in my head. You know, that was one point where I decided it was wise for us to just keep trekking.
Yeah, one of the things is obviously I've hiked a few times. The weather is really nice. You have all the cairns. And I used to think, why is there so many cairns? Because you could look, I could see 10 of them. But I've been on the mountains where I couldn't see the next one. And I'm like, I get it now. And I knew we were, as we ascended, we were going to just be able to go cairn to cairn to cairn to cairn. I was up for it because I've been in those situations before. It's kind of a group think, you know, we got into this together. We're getting out of this together. We're going to make group decisions. I knew you had spoken to that guy at the hut. And when you said, you know what, I think we should just go around. I just fell right into support for you because I didn't want to any way to second guess you because I can go back. You know, I live 2 hours from there. I could go back up anytime. So but I wanted to make sure that you had your trip, and I knew we would survive. I mean,
right.
It was also windier too. We would have been more exposed. I knew what the guy was saying, but we did make it around Adams, and then I led you. We got to that one point, and you're like, I think we go this way, but it had a trail name that I didn't recognize, and I'm like, I don't know if that's it. So then we ended up hiking, what, an extra mile and a half to get to the perch, which was my fault.
Well, we hiked an extra 3 miles because it was a mile and a half from that point to the point where we turned around. And then we decided to turn around from the Gulf side and go back on, I can't think of, is it Indian something trail? And I still... And in the back of my mind, I kept hearing your friend BK say, you know, there's this one Indian bridge path. There's this one path where you don't want to go on because it's very treachery. It's better for you even just to trek back and just stay on the Gulf side. So, yeah, so it was about a 3 mile detour that we did on that first day, which I think really hurt morale at that point.
Mm-hmm.
Just because, I think if we wouldn't have done that 3 miles and then afterwards, as we saw how you got from the Gulf Side Trail down to the perch via that other route, it would have been much easier. I think we would have had a little bit more confidence going into day two, but we made it. We made it down to the perch and pitched tent, got some beautiful scenery, some beautiful shots. And that's a ridge. At least I know I probably will never hit again. So it was, you know, yep. Pretty cool to kind of do it.
I'm not picking on you, but you, I won't say I enjoyed watching you trying to figure out how to use your jet boil, but there wasn't a lot of entertainment to have up there, so I took what I could find.
Right. Of course, you know, once again, a newbie trying to figure out the little things, you know. You get all the gadgets, but have you actually tried them before you actually go out there and into the woods, you know? What happened when you're out in the bushes? So even simple things like that as a newbie, understanding, you know, hey, before you go out, how about you pitch your tent a couple of times to make sure you're comfortable doing it? Or why don't you turn on your jet boil to see actually how it works and what you need, you know? Those are the little tidbits of newbie information that you just don't think about as a newbie, you know? So, yeah, that was pretty fun.
Yeah, I remember looking down at you, and you would turn it on, and you put the cup on, and it would go out. And I'm like, I remember asking you, is there another part? Because I've never seen one in person, but right. Seeing them on the online, I meant said there's supposed to be fins or something at the bottom, and you're like, no, I think they didn't give me all the parts, and then right. You've taken that cup off or something. I'm like, oh, it was that easy?
And it was that easy, and out of my preparedness, I had unpacked everything out of kind of that jet foil bag that they gave me,
yep.
And put it inside of the cup. So not only did I have to just take the cup, the lid off, but all the rest of the stuff was inside of the cup that I had totally forgot because I was, I was so frazzled from day one. I was just happy to be there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, what I liked is, you know, and I had my little beer can stove, and I'm just waiting for my water to boil. And you're like, Chris, I'm following the directions.
Mm-hmm.
So you had done everything right, and they didn't tell you the one piece. So
right. Just but take you, the bottom. Right.
Yeah, but you set your tent up before. That wasn't your first time. You did that pretty well.
Yeah, so I did practice doing the tent a couple times at home, but that was kind of it. The big thing I made sure of is that I had the gear that I thought I needed.
Yep.
And I know you mentioned it several times, packing your fears, and I think that for a newbie, for someone like me, that's exactly what I did. It was like, let me make sure just in case this, just in case that. I was good on packing and making sure I had the right things. But actually assessing when or how I was going to use them, making sure that I knew how to use things, like once again, like the jet boil, were things that I didn't do. Understanding the weight of my pack and how it would feel once I put it on, mm-hmm. You know, I didn't take time to measure that. I mean, so those are the little things that I've learned. How to keep your clothes dry if it's a rainy day, making sure that you pack extra bags. And I had just so happened, I was in a hotel, and right before I left the hotel to pick you up, there was a roll of toilet paper. So I said, yeah, I would just take the roll of toilet paper. Who knows? You know, packing your fears. And I was able to use the toilet paper to stuff into my shoes all to soak up the moisture so that the next day my shoes could be a little bit drier. So those little things of packing your fears and thinking about those things were actually helpful at that point. But once again, the preparedness is the key.
You were ahead of me because there's 2 points here. One is everyone who's been out there, we've all made, call it rookie mistakes. When I went hiking to that 3-day trip and I saw you, I probably had like 8 pounds of food. And when I got back to the car, I still had 5 pounds of food. So I had taken 5 pounds of food on a 3-day trek through the mountains. And so I just wanted to give you anything I'm saying here. It's not like I'm an expert. It's just I've done it more, and I've made dumb mistakes, and I've overpacked, and I had pack that was too heavy. But with respect to the shoes, I remember telling you that a lot of people, when they say the worst time of day is in the morning when you deflate your air mattress, I'm like, no, the second day you got to put those wet clothes back on. So even you overpacked in clothes. Oh, you had dry clothes. I didn't have dry clothes. As soon as I get up and get ready, I'm in wet clothes for as long as the duration of the day. Once I got to camp, I had a set of dry clothes. But of course, the next morning you got to get up and put the wet, because you got to keep the dry clothes for the next night. So even though you overpacked, and at first I kind of ragged on you a little bit, I'm like, oh, but he has dry clothes.
And I don't recommend that to everyone. So there is a gift and a curse of being a big guy going on a hike, you know, versus a small guy. You know, a smaller guy is more nimble. They probably have more endurance. But, and I mean, this is a stereotype because it's not all, you know, but just talking about my situation, being a bigger guy, being a stronger guy, I felt more comfortable carrying more stuff. The weight didn't bother me as much. So I could, you know, if my pack was a little bit heavier, okay, I can handle it. That was fine with me, you know. Luckily, listen, if it was a perfect weather time and we didn't have to use any of the extra stuff I brought, I will probably not even be considering the statement. Be like, oh, man, I overpacked and I have to learn how to pack better.
Sure.
But it just takes this one situation where you're like, I'm happy that I packed the things that I packed, as we may talk about a little bit later.
And you had said once it's on your back, and so you had a good pack, because if your bag was pretty heavy, but you, once you got on your back, you seemed fine. I mean, you were a motor.
Yeah. The beauty of these packs, as far as the weight, at least for me, and I don't know if this is for you or for others, but it's heaviest when I'm lifting it up with my hand to put it on my back. But once I put both straps on and clip in, I'm pretty good. In fact, sometimes the weight helps me. You know, it helps me move forward. So, yeah, that was pretty good.
One of the most dangerous parts of a hike, oddly enough, is putting on and taking off your pack. That's when people, because it's dangerous to lift and twist, and you're putting this heavy pack on or taking it off. Taking it off, obviously, may even be more, is you're kind of in an awkward position. You can tweak your back, or I've done it before, and you just got to be cognizant of it.
Well, ironically enough, I had tweaked my back literally the day before I left to come up there in the gym. And that's why the entire time I wore back brace. And so I wore back brace under my shirt and stuff, which gave me a bit of support, could walk with the back brace on. And I don't know, once again, this may not be like for others, but speaking from my own experience, my back felt better when I had the weight on it. So when I had the pack on, I actually felt better. It was when I took the pack off, and then when I took the brace off, that I felt all the pain, you know? There were so many little dynamics that were a part of.
Yeah, so that first night, did you sleep well?
Oh, yeah. My gosh, yes. I was so happy to be in the it's quasi-civilization, if you want to call it. But, you know, we're at the perch, and we, you know, we're pitch tents. I think at that time, weirdly enough, the moment we got there, it stopped raining. So it was, you know, we had some other people there as well. And, you know, I was so chill. I was, like, totally chill. I actually can remember saying, and we kept saying this over and over again, if you remember, on the first day, that, well, the first day is the hardest because we have to climb up the mountain to get to the ridge. When we were at, you know, I could just remember saying when I was in my tent right before going to bed, like, you know, well, it's okay. This is the worst of it, and we crushed. You know, we made it. So let's, you know, get up and go get it tomorrow.
You got to tell the story of the two girls you met when you went and got water.
Oh, my gosh. How funny was that? So when we were at the Madison Spring Hut, we met another hiker. She was very, very cool, very cool. I don't remember where exactly she had just came from, but she was on her way down. And we were telling her, ironically enough, we were telling her the route that we were going to go on, as well as how we were not supposed to go on the Indian Ridge. And she said, oh, I actually just hiked it. And I didn't die. And so we like, that's it. That's your trail name. You know, so we nicknamed her. We gave her a trail name. Well, Chris came up with it as Didn't Die. And so she ended up going back, and she was leaving to go down to her car, and we ended up going to the perch. And so we're there at the perch. I'm getting water at the water source, and there's just some nice, friendly hikers that were coming into the tent site, the pitch tent. And she looks at me, and this random hiker says, "Hey, do you know someone by the name of Didn't Die?" And I was so lost at the moment. I'm like, what is this woman talking about? She must be crazy. Maybe the mountain has gotten her. And I said, no, I have no idea what you're talking about. She says, I don't know. It was just this lady that we just passed. And she said, if you see a black guy out here hiking, just tell him that you met Didn't Die. And so when she said that, I automatically put two and two together that it was this woman who we had met hours before at the spring hut and had a lovely time. I mean, we really had a great time in the spring hut. All the people there were pretty eclectic. And she had said, hey, you know, I'm here with two other white guys. And she's like, listen, you know, how could you just say, you can't just say, hey, if you see a random white guy out here in the mountains, tell him that you met Didn't Die, because my gosh. But obviously, there was like one black guy, Presidential Travers, obviously, had to represent. And so, sure enough, ironically enough, I can't imagine what they were thinking when they saw me. It was like they saw Bigfoot or something. They're like, oh, a black guy, it's him.
Yeah, yeah.
It's the black guy on the presidential. I remember the black guy.
I remember joking with you. She didn't say, do you see a white guy? Because I'm like, oh, that really narrows it down.
Yeah, I know.
That was awesome. I mean, those girls were so bubbly, too, you know?
Oh, yes. And that's the thing that I think that 5 years prior to July when we met, that was the thing that really excited me about hiking and camping and just being out on a trail and being on the AT is everyone you meet, they're on their own journey, their own personal journey, whether they're out with their friends or they're, you know, hiking solo. But when you talk to them, people are just a wealth of information. Everyone was always upbeat and appreciative of just kind of being out in nature. And so those girls, to me, are reminiscent of the audience that you encounter out on these type of trails, which I really, really appreciate and enjoy.
Right. The only people that weren't that friendly, to be honest, were the trail runners. Excuse me, move!
I know, right? But they're different.
They were just goats. And you're like, right. how do they do that? Because, I mean, we're trying to go step by step, make sure we don't slip, don't twist an ankle. And they're just doop, 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 like they don't weigh anything.
Right. And yeah, that was like pretty confusing. So many people, when you look at a trail runner, when you look at other people that was walking pretty fast, I mean, I'm looking at myself and I'm like, dude, I'm like walking really gender on every rock. And these people, they have their poles, they don't have packs, and they're like doing the whole presidential with just like a little tiny pack with water in it, and they're gone.
Yeah,
you know,
they give 6 ounces of water and away they go.
Right. Totally. I mean, inspiring. Very inspiring. Mm-hmm.
So day two, we packed up and we hiked back up to where we were the day before. And then we had decided to go around Jefferson. And I'm back to a learning lesson on my part. I'm thinking we should have just gone over Jefferson. In hindsight, going around it, I think, was more treacherous than going over it.
Well, I think, once again, I don't know because I've never hiked Mount Jefferson.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, that was, we had made that, we had come to a group decision that was the best thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, once again, I wanted to hike Mount Jefferson. And I think you had mentioned, when we got up there, you said, well, how about, Greg, you go ahead and hike Mount Jefferson, and we'll meet you on the other side because we're going to hike around. And thank heavens we didn't do that. Thank heavens we didn't split up. And, you know, it's one of the things that we see in movies all the time scary movies when something tragic happens. It's always this point where people start to split up, you know? I'm going to go this way, you're going to go that way, and then we're going to meet up. And I just, even in the movies, I yell at the movie screen saying, don't do it, don't do it, don't leave them. Why are you going away? You fight together. And I'm happy that at that point I kind of thought back to my movie days and like, no, if we're either all going to climb it or we're all going to walk around, but we're not going to split up and then meet on the other side, especially in that weather during that time, how we were feeling. Yeah.
You could have twisted my arm pretty easy to go over the top because I was pretty well prepared. But at that point, Quinn's poncho was basically nothing. Probably would have made it, but he was already pretty soaked to the bone at that point.
Yeah, and at that point, I think we'd kind of made the decision collectively that this hike wasn't going to be one of those take up some beautiful shots looking out at the vista type of hikes. This was a trek.
Mm-hmm.
This was going from point A to point B as safely as possible. And that was the thought on safety more than anything. And I totally agreed with that. Like, you know, yeah, it was raining all the way from the day before. Day one, me personally, I had fell a couple of times and I was bloodied. And I was, the smart decision would be, let's just focus on trekking the presidential, not focus on climbing the peaks. We'll hit the peaks another time, but let's just go through. And so I thought that was a wise decision at that point when we were there. I thought we were making a wise decision.
You know, the best information we had at the time, and that's how you make all your decisions. You can look back and go, if I had known this, I would have done this. But, well, you didn't know that at the time. And somewhat I'm saying is hindsight. In hindsight, I'm thinking, I probably should have just gone over the top. But you're exactly right. When we got there, we're like, no, the wind had kicked up more in the higher elevation. So going around would shield us from that ferocious wind quite a bit.
So we thought, and actually it did. I mean,
it did.
Being on the side of the mountain, the wind wasn't what we dealt with. We didn't deal with much wind. We dealt with rain and falling rocks. But based on the little knowledge that we had at that point when we were looking at the juncture on where to go, we made a decision. Now, you know, the thing, once again, speaking of experience, I thought, me being a newbie, you know, between you and Quinn, you know, my goal was to be with more experienced hikers that read maps, understood what was going on, understood where we would go. The fact that I wasn't able to read the maps that we had is something that I'll never do again. Like, I'll never go on another hike without understanding the route we're going. That's the biggest part of it all. If you don't understand the terrain, if you don't understand how to get from point A to point B and exactly when you see the markers where to go, if you should have a compass. I should have had a compass being able to kind of gauge where we were supposed to go. But that was the biggest thing at that point where things started to go haywire with the fact when we were at that juncture, what we didn't know was to actually go to the outer loop trail around Jefferson. We actually had to climb up Mount Jefferson for a little bit until we hit that loop. And we didn't do that.
The couple of parts there was, I'd been up there quite a bit, but I didn't realize how much I relied on, I don't know what they call it, dead reckoning. I mean, I'm just used to looking around and knowing where to go. Having no visibility, I've never been terribly good about signs. I've always just been good about knowing where the sun was and which direction we're going to go based off sunlight. I mean, the only time we ever had a glimpse of anything was the clouds opened up for like 45 seconds and we could see something, and then it closed in and we didn't see anything. So my bad was I hadn't realized how much I just relied on looking around and understanding where we were. When there was no visibility, I'm like, I don't know where we are. And then we got to that, like you said, we didn't know, we had to kind of double back for a little while. And then there was two there was two Gulf trails. There was the Great Gulf, and then there was another Gulf. And I'm like, which Gulf
side?
And it didn't make sense. I'm like, we don't want to climb Jefferson, do we? Again, in hindsight, yes, we do.
Ironically enough, the safest route out of everything we did would have been just to do the route and climb all the mountains.
Well, the other part was what we did realize. Remember, we got to that like part where there was that little jut out in the mountain where the land just stopped, and I'm like, this can't be where we're supposed to go. But we'd already taken some pretty good descents at that point, and we're thinking, do we want to go fight all the way back up where we just climbed, which had some pretty treacherous areas, famous last words? Well, we might as well go down. It's probably the safer way. And then the adventure started.
I think that we had hit an impasse at that point. First off, let's go back. So when we took the outside route, which was the Gulf side trail, that was the Great Gulf Trail, we ended up literally on the side of Mount Jefferson, climbing over Falling Rock, which had, I guess, previously had been a huge rock slide. So we climb over this rock, which was absolutely amazing. And there was just this one moment where I think you were a bit ahead, but me and Quinn was walking and climbing over the rock, and one of the big rocks slid from up under him, and luckily it caught, because if it would have kept going, he would have been gone. And I just remember looking back and seeing him starting to slide down the mountain, and it was such a scary moment where, like, afterwards, him and I just, like, had to sit and collect our breath.
I know where that was, because you obviously was the leader of the pack when we went uphill. When it got flat or downhill, I was in my element.
Right.
I didn't do anything to try to get away from you guys. I just, you have a pace, and thump, thump, thump. And I got to that point, and you guys, I thought you would be right there, but you were further back, and now I didn't know that part of why it was you would run into a snag.
Yeah, we had some a couple of moments when you were in your pace where either Quinn fell, or there were a couple of times I fell. That's how I lost my sticks. I don't like to buy poles, so I try to find two really good walking sticks out in nature and kind of whittle it down. But I lost both of them on a rock slide because I fell and they slid down, and I was like, I'm not climbing down there to get those sticks. This is just to deal with it. And so we truly had to brace ourselves for everything. But luckily we survived and we made it and did quite well. But yeah, there were absolutely, absolutely some moments.
The one point I will say you were the hero of the moment was your attitude through the whole thing kind of carried us. You're just sparking positivity. But we got to that one spot. I was ahead of you, and I'm just looking down it, and I'm like, and you came down. I'm like, Greg, I don't know how to get down this. I don't know a safe way to get down. And you're like, and I looked, and you're like, can I see? And next thing I know, you're like, bloop, 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 and you're at the bottom. I'm like, holy crap. I had made fun of you, but you brought some rope. I'm like, why? And that saved the day.
Yeah, packing
your
fingers.
You packed your fingers, and if we hadn't had the rope, I'm sure we probably would have figured it out. But right. I'm like, thank God Greg packed his fears, because that rope was the savior.
Yeah. I'd never forget right before that when we got to and where we were. For people that know the Presidential Traverse and kind of that area, we were actually on Jefferson's nose, which is like this point. Mm-hmm. And so one of the things I say you know, as we're walking down to this point and we're noticing that the land is getting shorter and shorter and shorter, all we could see in front of us is white because we were in the clouds. We couldn't see any vista. We didn't know how high up we were, other than just knowing the elevation from the sign. Mm-hmm. But it was just the freakiest thing walking down this land that's just shrinking beside you, and you're just like literally walking like you're walking off a cliff, and you know it's a cliff in front of you, but you can't see the cliff. You know,
yeah, I remember joking with you, it's like a movie set and they hadn't painted the scenery yet.
Right. It was just so, and I don't know if that was a good or bad thing, because I can't imagine if it was pouring, raining in a clear sky and we got stuck in that same position and we would have been walking down this peak looking out at all the range and the ridge and just being freaked out. Like, oh my gosh, where are we going? You know, so I don't know if the clouds were actually helpful for us at that point. But, you know, once again, it hit all the way to the edge of the cliff and then the trail turned and have you walk down. And, you know, you were ahead of us, and I just remember looking at your face, and you, for me, it's the look in someone's eyes when you can tell, you know, and you're like, dude, I don't know how to do this. And I look over and all I see is like a rock wall that's about what, 12 to 15 feet with our packs, that's just going straight down. Mm-hmm. And then at the very end of it, there's like a hook. If you think of it as like a candy cane, you know, it goes straight down and then it's like a hook. But at the end of the hook, if you keep going, you'll go right off the cliff. It was just, it was like totally freaky. And so I remember looking at you. I remember looking down at this sheer white rock, just wet wall. But then I remember turning around and looking up, and Quinn was coming down at that point, and it was like, there is no way that we can go back. Even if we wanted to go back, we physically, not just because we were strong or we were tired, but the route wouldn't have allowed us to actually go back up the trail we had just came. We were done. It was like, it was either do this or do, and I quickly assessed that. It took me 2 seconds to turn around, look up at where we just came and said, well, we can't go up. We have to go down. Mm-hmm. You know what's going to happen. And so, thank heavens, you know, I looked down, I kind of saw a couple of hiccups on the rocks, and it was like, you know, I'm just going to hold on as long as I can to the edge of the wall. And luckily my shoes, luckily they were supportive enough to help me kind of get down there.
Yeah, we worked as a team through there, and I remember joking with you when we got to the bottom, is, and it kind of hooked. So if you had kept going straight, like you had said, you're going to go into no man's land, and who knows when they'd find you. You had to go down and hook back almost 90 degrees. But that was the part I remember telling you all the way up to that point is, you know, you're always like, scoot on your butt, scoot on. And I'm like, frick, I don't scoot on my butt. And then In that case, I kept my center of gravity very low, and I scooted, and I remember joking with you, Greg, you know it's serious when Chris scoots on his butt.
right.
But sure. What I liked about us is, I don't know about you, I was never afraid, I was never scared, but I didn't want to stop and think about it. I said, we have to get through this, we just got to keep moving, because if at any point you stopped and think about all the what ifs, it was one of those times, we just got to go. We just got to keep going. Then we went down further and further and further. Then we got to it was so steep that they had ladders because there was no other way down. Thank God there was ladders.
And then don't forget, even before we got there, remember, so we get down this sheer rock wall, and then we tie the rope. You know, we used a rope to lower our packs down together. But then Quinn came last, and, you know, I did the slide, and it was fine. And, you know, it was a little wonky, but I made it. Then you came down. Well, when Quinn came down, he almost missed it and almost slid off the cliff. Like, he literally almost slid off of the candy cane, if, you know, we want to call it that. Mm-hmm. And I just remember, this was like another Quinn and Greg moment. as he was sliding down, I could see that he was going faster than you and I did. And it was, we caught eyes. And the thing that is crazy about those moments, and maybe other people will feel this, is that in these scary situations, it's like things go in slow motion. Like, I could remember looking him dead in his eyes as he's sliding down this wall, like, oh my gosh, he's going too fast, you know? Just this caught moment. But he finally gets down, we get our packs down, and then we get up, and I will never forget Quinn saying, I hope that's the last cliff that we have to climb down. And we turn the corner, and bam, there was another cliff. And, but the difference with this cliff, it was about the same, about 10 to 15 feet straight down. The only difference is that this cliff actually had a couple of tree branches that were stuck in the mountain. So once again, I saw it, and I said, you know what? Let me get my Tarzan on. Right? So I'm like, this is what we do. Just check this out. Trust me, I think I got this. And you guys are like, what? So I like grab one of the tree branches to go down half the mountain. And that tree branch swung me to the other tree branch. So then I could grab the other one and land safely. And then you saw, like, you're like quick to the trigger. You're like, oh, okay, I got it. I see what you did. And then you did it. And then Quinn did it. Pretty good. But I mean, it was just so crazy how we had got down that one really crazy cliff, and Quinn was like, oh my gosh, I hope that's the last one. And the moment we turned the corner, there was the other cliff.
Yeah, I remember looking when I, because I obviously got to that next one, I didn't want to say the words, and I looked at you, and you looked at me, and you knew there was another, there's another one.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm like, sorry to say, let's get it. In those moments, I have to say, I never once thought life or death until after the fact. I mean, even while we were at the top, I had had all these different ideas of what we were going to do. The fact that you guys had tarps, I thought was awesome, and I had a tent. So in my mind, I'm like, if we get stuck somewhere, I'm just going to have them tie their tarps up. We can all hunker into my tent, and thank heavens I have the jet foil. That we could like make some tea, make some coffee, and stay warm at night, but at least we'd be together.
Yep.
So, you know, this is the fears that accumulate is in hindsight, because in the moment, you're focused on survival. You just, you know, we have to go from point A to point B. I don't know how we're going to get there, but we're going to get there. Let's go.
I don't know if I said it out loud or it was just in my brain, because during that time, to be honest, we didn't talk much. It was we the only words we said was just certain things to get us to the next, like you said, you know, use the tree branches and stuff. But in my brain, I'm like, we really need to focus because our safety is not assured right now. I don't think we were close to death by any means, but it sounds like Quinn had a couple of scary points. Imagine if one of us had twisted an ankle or popped a shoulder or anything in those spots, and that could have happened. But then, just when we got down to the trees, and we're thinking, oh, we got it, then we lost the trail.
Right. And once again, for your audience that knows the presidential, we ended up on the Six Husbands Trail. Everything that I've read about the Six Husbands Trail, it is one of, if not the most difficult trail to hike in the presidentials. Also, the thing that I learned about this trail is that no one descends it, even on a good day. Like, this is a trail that you ascend because it's for rock climbers. You're climbing up. But you don't climb down the Six Husbands Trail. We didn't know that. We had to survive. So we ended up having to take the Six Husbands Trail. Another thing that I've read up was that where we got lost was at the cave. So there is this point where you're climbing literally through these huge rock caves, but the cairn is somewhere, and we could not find it whatsoever. And so from everything that I've read, there are many people on a good day to get lost exactly there because they can't find the cairn and where to go. And that's when things got real. That's when things really got real, and we started bushwhacking.
Yeah, so we got lost in the caves, and then we had to debate whether we were going to go back and try to find the trail. I don't remember whether Quinn said it or I said it, but we could hear water. And being an outdoors person, I've always been told if you're lost, go to water, follow water down, and you'll get to a road or a trail or something man-made. And so then we started heading towards the water through definitely in places where very few people have walked on that mountain.
Yes, with a whole bunch of moss that looks like land and grass, but the moss is actually covering very deep ditches on the side of the mountain that we were climbing down. Once again, we were bushwhacking. So we get lost. We decide, Chris, you heard water first, and you're like, let's go to the water source. So we start trying to, after we got lost, the thing was, let's just go to the water source. So we're taking all these different steps, and once again, you were ahead of Quinn and I, and Quinn is behind me. And I take a step down, thinking that I'm standing on land, and end up stepping into this moss that completely gave way, and it turned into this deep ditch. And I fell so far down in the ditch, It was just incredible. Quinn yelled out for me. That's how, like, I fell all the way up to my shoulders. And my pack is actually what saved me from falling even further in. I don't know how deep the ditch was, because I know that my feet never touched ground down there. I just got stuck above and climbed back out of it. And I remember being bent backwards, but because I had my pack on, my pack is what prevented me from falling further into this ditch. And Quinn said, because Quinn was behind me and saw me just drop down, he was like, I thought you were a goner. I mean, and not like goner, he thought that I was fit, but he thought that I was going to just keep going down, because it was so freaky. And even then, climbing back up out of it, it was just like, okay, let's keep moving. You know, I'm good.
We were in one mind. We got to get to something safe. One thing that I did know, we were gonna tent. We had prepared to stay two nights, and this would have been the second night. So I was still in my mind, we're going to find a place to camp. But the issue was, is we couldn't camp where we were. We had to get to something. I remember Quinn saying, I thought you were a goner, but I didn't realize how far you had gone down. I did look back and you had must have already gotten up. I thought maybe one of your legs or something had gotten caught, because what I was doing was I was probing with my poles.
Mm-hmm.
You had said, now it makes sense, you had lost your walking sticks.
Exactly.
So you didn't have that benefit anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And right. Then even Quinn had his mop handle or whatever he had.
Yeah, you know.
So we did get to the water. We followed, you know, that was a good call at that point, with all things being equal at that point. We did follow it down.
Well, thank heavens for Quinn, because we finally found the water source. But then I think you had said, well, let's walk a little north of the water source, because in your experience, you're not going to have good footing by the water.
Yep.
And so we trekked a little bit north of the water, and Quinn was like, no, I want to be next to the water. I mean, I think Quinn at that point was like, I will swim this water to safety, but I need to be next to the water. So Quinn decided to walk back down to the actual water source, which, for people who may know this area, we're at the Jefferson Ravine. And when Quinn got to the ravine, he saw across the ravine, the campsite. And he's like, I think I see a campsite literally right across.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the thing that we know is that, one, if he would not have walked down, we would not have found that campsite so soon.
No.
But
if we had kept on my trek, we would have come across the trail that we hiked
yes.
today.
Yes. Exactly. We would have ended up
so
just hitting.
We would have been okay either way. Mm-hmm. Quinn's method was more expedient than mine. So mm-hmm. there was nothing wrong with it. But I didn't put up any protests. We were a team at that point. And right. when Quinn said, I think I see, I'm like, then by all means, I'm following you.
Right.
Something that the listeners don't know is Quinn was the caboose the whole day. Except mm-hmm. for now, he was the leader. I mean, he had a second wind of all of a sudden he was excited. I mean, I couldn't keep mm-hmm. up with him. He was a bull at that point.
Mm-hmm.
Then we got down. We did get to the campsite. We kept walking around trying to find, it was just a wild camp. And I was happy to see that there was a sign there, which means, okay, we're near somewhere where we're supposed to be.
Right.
We did try to look and see if we could keep hiking, but I really think we should probably bed down because we're all tired. We've just gone through a pretty emotional and mentally high stress thing. I think we should probably just bed down because we might start making bad decisions at this point.
Yeah, I think that was a good decision on your end. You know, once again, being a newbie, me personally feeling I'm physically able to handle these things, let's just go. Let's keep going down. And I'm glad we didn't. But not only the fact that you're right, you know, we were wet. I think at that time I had just started shaking because of the rain. I do remember that. We were off path. If we would have kept going, we would have kept bushwhacking. Because
mm-hmm.
after we had crossed the ravine and found the campsite, we couldn't find where the trail started or ended. So we were just going to keep trekking south, and we would have been across the water from where we were supposed to be. So that was pretty incredible, that whole situation, just deciding, making it an executive decision at that point to say, you know what, how about we just take the day, exhale, and get our heads right and get ready for tomorrow. Fuel up, get some food.
Yep.
That was a very smart thing to do.
Yeah, because at this point, I don't remember what time it was. It's probably 5-6 o'clock. We had a couple mm-hmm. more hours of light, but I don't know about you, but all the way down the trail, I didn't drink anything. I didn't eat anything.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I was just focused on, I got to get down this thing. And
right.
I remember, and I don't remember I mentioned to you, is I've read a lot of books, and it's usually not one mistake that gets you, it's multiples.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking to myself, we've already made multiple mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
We're in that period that you read in books, and they're like, if they had to stop at any step, they'd have been okay. And I'm like, well, I think we're safe. We were next to the
mm-hmm.
water. We had a place for your tent. Unfortunately, Quinn somehow, I don't know what happened, during the day when we kept dropping packs, I don't know what happened with his pack, but all of his gear was wet. He had like one set of half-wet clothes. And so he got his hammock set up and got in his hammock and in his sleeping bag. And I remember him saying, I don't want to be rude, but I got to stay here because I don't have any extra anything to save me at this point. After talking to him the next morning, I think he was a little closer to the edge than even I had thought, because he said it was a cold night for him.
Yeah, I had absolutely no idea that Quinn's entire pack was wet and that he was sleeping in a wet tent. I knew none of that until after the fact. And I even told him, I said, dude, why didn't you just come? We could have bunkered in my tent, you know?
He could have done that. I probably had a jacket he could have borrowed. I'm sure he could have borrowed sweatpants or whatever from you. We could have set him up, but he just hunkered down and got in his own brain. So,
I mean, we were at that point, as you said, that we had already went down the wrong path, had some really hard moments where things were shaky. And Quinn especially had some very some interesting moments that I personally witnessed and saw. And I got his mindset. He was like, dude, once I pitch my tent, I mean, pitch my hammock, I'm done. You know, I don't want to move. I don't want to get up. I just want to rest. And so I thought initially that he just wanted to rest. He just wanted some alone time. But I had no idea it was more so he didn't want to move because he didn't want to get, because it was still raining at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, I don't want to get even more wet.
Well, you know, I remember starting the fire, and you remember everything had been raining. And I don't know whether you had said it or like, you think you can start a fire? I'm like, oh, I'm sure I can start a fire. Challenge accepted. But then I got it going. And I know, because you guys had changed. You were in dry clothes. I thought Quinn was in dry clothes. He came over. And then it just opened up again and started to rain, which was unfortunate because if the rain had held off for a little while, we could have dried his stuff off. We could have dried some of your stuff off. I had a pretty good fire going. And finally, once I had it stable, I set up my hammock, and then it just started, the skies just opened up, and I'm like, I guess that fire is not going to help us tonight.
Well, me being a newbie, the thing that I worried about was bears and stuff, and being out in the wilderness, out in a place where there was no other hikers, there was no other truckers, because I think one of the things that you had said to me to give me comfort was that, you know, with, you know, 4th of July weekend, it's going to be a lot of hikers. Because it's a lot of hikers, you don't really have to worry about wild animals because they want to stay away from people. But we were now off trail, you know.
Mm-hmm.
We were in a place that there were no other hikers. And we're just out here in the sticks. And then what I started to think about more so throughout the night was that I pitched my tent right at the water source. Like, literally, that's not where you want to pitch your tent. You want to pitch your tent just a little bit away from it. Because that's where wild animals get food, they get drinks. And so I remember thinking about that, and I even a couple of times got out in the rain to help keep the fire going, because I do know that, you know, animals aren't very keen to fire. So they tend to stay away from it. So the fire was very helpful with that, at least, if anything, for my own peace of mind, unfortunately. And it did emit a little bit of heat, not much, obviously, but...
Yep.
Just for that peace of mind, I was kind of grateful that we had it.
Yeah, in hindsight, one of the things I've said to myself, if I ever go hiking again, is I'm going to bring some sort of little extra tarp of just a basic one. Because if I know now, because I've watched YouTube videos about it, because I had to use my tarp to go over my gear. But if I had a little one, we could have kind of hunkered underneath. And they say it doesn't take much for that heat underneath a tarp to really warm things up. Then we would have been out of the rain. I'm like, if I had known all that, I could have set us up where I could have warmed Quinn up. I could have, would have, should have. I know things now that I didn't know then.
Right. I mean, even if we all would have just stayed in one spot.
Yep.
You know, if y'all would have put both of your tarps together to create an even bigger dry area and then pitch. I mean, and I don't know how possible that was with the trees and how that was set up, but being able to create a bigger area with the huge tarp over top, we could have put the fire under the tarp, and then that would have been good too. We wouldn't have had to make such a big fire. We could have just made a little fire that kept all of us warm in that area. But once again, we were in survival mode. And not as much physical as mental. We were in mental survival mode, and I think everyone at the end of day two needed some me time to just reflect on life.
The other portion of it was also, I don't know about you, but I think just survival mode is correct. We're talking about what we could have done with today with nice clear heads, full bellies. Right. At that time, I don't know about you, but I wasn't thinking 100% clearly. So in hindsight, we could have done this. We could have done that with a tarp. We could have, at the time, we got to set up camp. We're going to bed down here for the night. So I'm going to set up my hammock. And because that second night, I don't know about, I think you were probably the warmest, I wasn't far behind Quinn. Is my gear was rated probably to about 45 degrees. It got colder than 45 degrees because I was shivering. I knew I wasn't gonna die, but it wasn't comfortable by any. Yeah. You know,
I remember being in my tent, seeing my breath, and I knew it was cold. In fact, what I ended up doing, and I know this isn't recommended, but it was getting pretty chilly. You know, I ended up using the jet boil inside of my tent and made like some tea or something because I brought, me overpacking, I brought a couple of tea bags.
Sure.
And so I made some tea like in the middle of the night just to warm up, and it really helped me get warmed up. And once again, I wish I would have knew you guys was dealing with that situation because I had extras. I brought extras. I brought extra coffee. I brought extra oatmeal.
Yep.
I had a cup of noodles. My whole goal was to make sure I had stuff that could keep me warm.
Yep.
And make sure I had enough. So, yeah, it was so helpful. And it was also obviously helpful being in a tent because I could zip it up the whole thing and, you know, kind of shield off a little bit of the cold. Mm-hmm. But, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I knew where I was, and there was two ways to get around it. Was kind of hunker down. Like, I wasn't shivering terrible. I just was right on the edge of just uncomfort. And I knew from experience, because this is a survival 101 thing, you're going to be uncomfortable, but you're not going to die. So I've been in that situation before. I knew I was fine. So... Mm-hmm. There was no need to get up. There was no need to do jumping jacks and get the blood flowing. And I didn't even think, oh, Quinn must have had a horrible night till later. And I felt bad. I'm like, oh, I wish I had put two and two together. Or he had reached out. Cause I know between you and I, we would have helped figured out something for him, you know?
Well, yeah, and the thing is, I think Quinn was in, like, his own space. I mean, I remember after the first night, I didn't think he had clothes. So when we woke up the next morning at the end of day one, going into day two, I'd actually went to him with my extra clothes. It's like, hey, you want this? Keep you warm. And he said, no, I'm fine. I got some. So I actually thought he had extra clothes. I did not know that his bag got soaked. So I had no idea until the next day what he had went through at the end of day two. But once again, that's his heroism. The fact that he was able to brave that, he didn't freak out, he stayed calm and did what he felt like he needed to do best.
Right. I thought he had, when he told me, he says, all my stuff got wet. I just have what I have on. I thought he meant he had one set of dry clothes, but because he never asked for help. I mean, I don't know whether that's good or bad in this situation, but we did wake up the next morning. We did pack up, and he went exploring, and he found the trail across the...
No, that's not what happened. So what ended up happening is I woke up earlier than both of you, and I needed water. So, you know, obviously my tent was right there by the water source. So I went out, and it was a really nice morning. It was, it wasn't raining at that point. The sun was shining, and the ravine was really, really overflowing. But as I was getting water, I just happened to look up, and I saw a sign. And I said, oh, my gosh, there's a sign. And I saw the sign even more. But obviously, I had fell a couple of times. I was not comfortable. So I went to Quinn. And I said, hey, Quinn, I think I see a sign across the water. And he said, where? And he came with me. And he saw the sign. And my thought was, hey, so we see the sign. We know the trail is there. That's where we're going to go. My thought was, hey, let's eat. Let's get settled. Let's get comfortable. And just chill. He was like, dude, I'm going across. I want to see what the sign says. So he decided to walk across, and that's when he realized exactly where we were.
Okay. That makes sense, because you guys had been talking and doing stuff before I get up, and then I was packing up some of my stuff and boiling some water to have something warm, because, you know, I was cold from overnight, so I was kind of tending to myself. And then I remember coming down, and you guys were all checking out the sign, and I just misunderstood, because I saw Quinn on the other side of the water, so that's why I had thought that he had found it.
Right. No. But, I mean, Quinn decided that he walked across the water.
And, yeah, the New Yorker.
You guys are much better.
Yeah.
Well, hey, I thank gosh for my vision.
Oh, yeah.
And it was so interesting even finding the sign, you know. It was like kind of a movie moment at that time.
Yeah.
You know, I'm waking up, it's day three. I'm focused on being optimistic and focused on the good. And I'm like, okay, we're going to hit it today. We're going to get this done. And I'm like, let me just get some water, just regroup and get ready for whatever comes day three. But we're getting out of here. And sure enough, you know, as I'm getting water, I see the sign. It's like, oh, heaven, there it is.
Then we did pack up, and we still didn't know exactly how to get out. I think I had us on the right way, but those other guys turned us around to go back towards the auto road.
Right.
I think if we had kept going the way I was tending, I knew the road was down there. I could hear cars, and I think we would have been fine to go down to the main road, but we still would have had to hike back to either your car or back to the gift shop. But those two guys turned us around, and we had to hike up and up and up and up and up to get to the auto road. But it was nice to finally get to the auto road. Then I didn't know this. It was 2 miles down the auto road, and I had someone yelling at me from the gift store. And I'm thinking, I know I'm not supposed to be on the road, and I didn't realize it was you guys. You guys had hitched the ride.
Yeah. You know, so what happened is, see, I'm not sure, but so when we were walking back, I think it was a gift that these guys took us the other direction, because at least we hit the auto road. I think if we would have taken the other route, I'm not sure if it would have taken us back up the mountain. It seemed like we at one point had started walking back uphill, which I really didn't like.
Mm-hmm.
But even more so, I think it would have taken us to a point on a road where we would have had to hopefully hitch a ride from someone or something.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so being able to go back to the auto road, I think, was absolutely awesome. What happened? I mean, you were ahead of us, and me and Quinn were together, and you know,
Greg, it was nothing against you guys, but I'm like, I'm done. I'm getting out of these woods.
I hear you.
I had just put my, I said, I'm wet. I'm nasty. None of these people are going to pick me up. But you guys proved me wrong that somebody will pick you up. But I didn't hitch. So I said, it's 2 miles. I've walked it before. I just put my head down and got to the bottom. Of course, you guys beat me to the bottom. And but it was pretty
incredible. So what ended up happening is, as we were walking down and we have our thumbs up saying, hey, who knows what happened, the guy who was actually driving the shuttle bus to take you to the top of Mount Washington, the dude pulls over. He rolls down his window and says it's illegal to hitchhike on the auto road. I said, yeah, we're kind of in a life or death situation. We just need to get out of here. And he's like, well, you can't hitchhike. And I said, well, can you give us a ride? It looks like you have space. We're just trying to get to the bottom. And he says, no. And as he said no, I said, well, then move, because I'm a hitchhike. And I put my thumb back up, and the car right behind him must have saw him stopping, and he decided that he was going to stop for us. And it was the greatest thing. It was a family, a husband and wife with a minivan that had three small children in the back seat. Like, literally, they had to be like 5, 2, and 1. Like, they were in car seats. And they let us pack into their minivan and squeeze in. It was just beyond incredible. We were so thankful. Yeah. It was just, they let us sit in the back and we sat down and they just drove down the auto road and asked us how we got here. And thank heavens for good people, because I would have not stopped to pick up a hitchhiker, but they sure enough picked us up. And I think, like, we were at that point where our legs were shot like yours. So it was just kind of
bad. I just had to stay mentally with it, because I needed to get to the bottom, because I knew I was about done. Can't be done a mile from the end. I have to be done when I get to the bottom. Doesn't sound like that this adventure ruined you from wanting to hike again, so that's good.
Oh, no, I've already talked to Lou, and the plan is to go in September back and do the presidential. So
you're going
to... So the thing for me is, it things like that doesn't... It inspires me, because I felt defeated. I felt like we went there full of spirit and learned our lesson the hard way. And now I want to go back more prepared, with more experience. And even so, like someone like Lou, who is, you know, I want to go with a guide and experience someone that knows the trail, and we're not going to be figuring it out together.
Sure.
You know, and I think Lou is someone that kind of knows that. I think if we had more experience, if I personally had more experience, it would have been a completely different trek as far as getting lost and knowing what to do or whatever. But just until you have that experience, I think one of the things that I learned immediately is that it's good to have people with more experience that understand where you're going before you decide to hike something of that magnitude.
Yeah, well, we thought we had a pretty good handle on it.
We definitely did, and I have to say this, even with our inexperience, I think given circumstances, the one thing you said was right. Stayed together, stayed level-headed, and made quick decisions that I think at that point we all agreed on. And they were very, very pertinent in the moment. So
sure.
It's good. It's very good.
So when did you think you were going to go back up? Did you say September?
Yeah, my plan is, so right now I have a bike ride in Nova Scotia that's coming up the week of September 5th through 10th, but at the end of September, I'm thinking of going back up on the presidential. I think that would be pretty incredible with autumn foliage. Some people that would be pretty exciting, and so
nice.
We'll see what happens. Yeah, for sure.
You'll have to check back in with me in the podcast when you successfully complete it, and let me know how it went.
Thank you. Yeah, we'll do, for sure.
Good.
Yep.
Well, I'll let you run. I appreciate you talking it out with me. I did learn some things that I didn't know, obviously, but I do believe we're kind of bonded a little bit into this adventure is something I'll remember as long as I live.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. You know, I took some pretty cool photos. Except for when we, you know, talk about it again, we realize that the photos that we should have taken were the moments where we were just trying to survive. So
that was
kind of interesting.
So
yeah.
last piece, are you talking to Quinn since he's gotten back home? Is he doing all right?
Oh, yeah, he's fine. Actually, I saw Quinn a couple weeks ago. I was trying to link up with him this past couple of days, but unfortunately I wasn't able to. But yeah, Quinn is cool. We had some really deep conversations about that, about the hike and how grateful we are now to kind of be here. It was definitely a life-changing experience, I think, for all of us.
You had mentioned that I was hoping he could come on to the podcast, but you said that was a no-go for him.
Yeah, he's... he wasn't very interested in going on a podcast. There's a lot going on with work and et cetera, et cetera. So
yep.
Maybe next time. Hopefully I'm going to try to get him to go back and do another hike.
Sure.
We'll see what happens with that. Like I said, I think all in all, we all had a very, very amazing experience that we will never, ever forget, no matter Yeah. What, even during this presidential Congress again, would not change the fact that it was an incredible experience. You know, that first time, not knowing what's going on, what to do, it actually makes it even more compelling to tell the story of our survival and how people with inexperience, but with some type of balance, is able to come together and say, hey, we all may not know what we're supposed to do. However, what is the best decision at this point? And, you know, being able to add all of our different abilities and knowledge together to say, yes, this is the best decision, and we all agree, I think, was incredible.
Yep. We're kind of bonded together at this point. I mean, we'll live our days, but I mean, it's one of those adventures that you look back and go, I remember who I was with on that trip. You know, your next trip might go perfect, but this, I think this last one will be memorable for you for a long time.
Yeah, for sure. You know, and listen, our foundation, Heroes Rebellion Athletic Foundation, the whole purpose of it is to do things that we did. Getting together with your friends, going out for adventures, going out for athletic feats, using your passion for adventure, for fitness, for sport, to raise money for charities that are impacting the world. And this is just one of them, one of many. And
yeah,
I'm looking forward to the next one.
Maybe in hindsight, this will be a good one to actually have kicked it off. We'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see.
Yep.
We'll see, for sure.
All right, thanks, Greg.
All right, Chris.
I enjoyed reminiscing. I can't wait to hear about you. I watch all your adventures, so keep on trucking.
All right, I'll see you soon, and we're gonna do another one soon. Don't think I'm letting you off the hook that easy.
Yeah, you know where to find me.
Yeah. All right, I'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Greg. All right, bye.
Yep.
And that's the show for this month. As always, you can find the podcast at hyohpodcast.com. And for more information on the podcast, you can go to the Facebook page. If you like what you hear, please consider giving us a positive review on iTunes or wherever you get the podcasts. This podcast is a labor of love, and your support is very much appreciated. If you'd like to help support the podcast with a donation, please go to hyohpodcast.com/donate for a one-time donation. I would like to thank those who support the podcast month to month, and if you enjoy the podcast, please consider supporting the podcast via the Patreon page. Please tell your friends about the podcast and be sure to subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss an episode. And as always, I would love to hear from you with questions, comments, and show ideas. You can email me anytime at chris@hyohpodcast.com. And finally, a special thank you to Ben Sound for our podcast music and ITX for the hosting the podcast. As always, thank you for listening. See you next month.